Welcome back to the third episode of Box of Sweet Science. I am your host, Marshall Brown, your guide in light in these dark times. I'm here to bring you to the truth. I'm here to bring you to the facts. Facts. I only deal with facts, a lot of opinion, but more so facts. My facts formulated off of knowledge, wisdom, understanding, experience, and this boxing game. So I use that verse to say goodbye to all the other fake pages, fake boxing news. I am the real deal. So today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the franchise champion and what that means and how does that work. Because a lot of people send me DMs on my Instagram talking about what does that mean, how to explain it to it. So I'm going to take this time today and try to explain to you exactly what the franchise champion means and title. So we're starting off with the WBC, Mauricio Sulaimán. The WBC is the number one coveted belt in the world. Everybody wants that. It's the green belt, the green and gold belt. But what happens as of late, they keep adding new dimensions to the WBC. They keep giving new belts, adding new franchises. Now, growth is nothing wrong with growth. But when you overdo it, then you become it becomes saturated and it doesn't have the same appeal as you would think it should. So, Lomachenko and Canelo, two amazing fighters, both went through various weight classes to dominate. They went through different weight classes, they beat the top guys, and they became champions. To celebrate them and their feats going up and down in weight, Mauricio Sulaimán, the president of the WBC, decided that he was going to award these guys or upgrade them to the franchise status. This became controversial because a lot of people didn't understand what was the need for it. Because it changes the dynamic of the fight game, and I'll explain to you why. The reason why a lot of people were confused is because, for example, Devin Haney was elevated to the regular champion at the 135-pound weight class, which is the former champion Lomachenko's weight. He had the WBC regular championship. Devin Haney was the Intercontinental or something like that, the silver belt. After they decided to upgrade Lomachenko to the franchise champion status, Devin Haney was then upgraded to the regular belt. Now, what makes this a little bit different and difficult is that Teofimo Lopez, when he fought Devin Haney, when he fought Lomachenko, he negotiated to have the franchise title as a part of his belt collection. But here's where it gets funky. The original inception of that belt meant that the franchise holder of that belt, whoever held that belt, did not have to fight their mandatories. They don't have to fight their mandatories. And the distinction of franchise champion was never supposed to be defended or lost. But they made an exception in this fight with the Teofimo Lopez and Lomachenko fight. They made that distinction, and so now here's where it becomes confusing. Lomachenko loses to Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo Lopez is technically the undisputed champion at 135. But how could that be if Devin Haney is still recognized as the regular champion at 135? Now, this is why everybody is so confused. I'll try to explain it. I contacted the WBC and I asked them to give me a little bit of clarity on what that means. Who's the real franchise champion? Who is the undisputed champion? And who's the regular champion? Their response to me was, the president is going to come out making a formal announcement soon. That was about 3 weeks ago, and I haven't heard anything from him. Okay, fine. So using intelligence guided by experience, I make my own deductions. I came up and I realized, okay, outside of the money grab, I understand why the WBC is doing it. I know it's a way to make more money. They charge, and for all you that don't know, each belt that's held by a champion, they have to pay a sanctioning fee to the governing bodies. The governing body in this case is the WBC. The whichever belt that a fighter fights for, there's a fee associated with maintaining that status because it's technically a quid pro quo. If you have championship status, you can demand more money. So you shouldn't have a problem with paying a sanction of fees. That's what's confusing to a lot of people. So the WBC, in my estimation, is using greed. They're using greed and they're using their power and they're making a power play towards the divisions. They're introducing these carrots as the franchise champion to the fighters. Now, again, Lomachenko, when it was introduced to him, he went out publicly and said, no, I didn't ever ask for that. I didn't want it. I don't know what it was. But because they gave it to me, I was honored to accept it because I understand what it represents. And anybody in their right mind would have taken that belt because they understood what it is. And it's just a small percentage, 3% of their purse. So whatever that works out to be, that's fine. So now, for him, he didn't lose anything because he was already paying the sanctioning fee for the regular belt. What the WBC did was double dip, and they said, okay, we can get more money for this 3% if we give Devin Haney the regular belt and boost him up. So they didn't lose anything. They gained something. That's how you do business. It's pretty smart. I get it. But the confusion is now you have a undisputed champion in Lomachenko. No, formerly Lomachenko, now Teofimo. But is he really the undisputed champion if you have another guy who has the same belt? How is that possible? How does that work? We need answers. I need answers. But the way it was spelled out initially, it was Lomachenko and Canelo, franchise champions. Those guys had the distinction of fighting who they wanted when they wanted. They did not have to defend the franchise title. They did not have to fight a mandatory. None of those things was never necessary. But again, it changed once Teofimo said, I want to negotiate. I want to compete. I want everything that this man has. They agreed to it. Lomachenko and his group, Top Rank and his group, they agreed to it because they had no idea that Lomachenko was going to lose to Teofimo. So now things changed. Now they have to answer these questions. Now they have to come up with the right answer. Who is the franchise champion? Because they both can't be. They both can't be a champion and a franchise champion. You get either one or the other. You're either pregnant or you're not. You can't be a little bit pregnant. So the thing is, Devin Haney technically did not fight for the belt. He was elevated to that belt. But he went out and he defended his title against Gamboa recently, last Saturday, which raised a lot of questions in my mind because I'm trying to understand how does Gamboa, who just was beat and technically beat by Gervonta Davis in his last fight, gets another shot at the WBC championship title after losing his fight. That is another story, a story for another day. But I will say, it's interesting to me that the WBC moves this way. They send out signals and then they take them back. I just don't understand because Javier Fortuna was next in line to fight for the WBC champion. Now, in all fairness, Javier Fortuna was supposed to be fighting Jorge Linares, but Jorge Linares tested positive, but Javier Fortuna didn't. So when that fight fell out, technically, he should have got first dibs at Devin Haney for the WBC 135 belt, the regular belt. But that didn't happen. For whatever reason, that didn't happen. And it raises a lot of questions on why wasn't Javier Fortuna picked? Why was he overlooked? Why was Devin Haney elevated? Why wasn't he the next in line for Devin Haney's title? Why was Devin Haney able to pick Gamboa? Well, all these questions need answering. I really can't understand it, but I do know a lot about the franchise champion. And what that is another way to make money. It's another way for the WBC to capitalize off their popularity, off of their stature and this as a sanctioning body. It's not fair. It's not fair to the guys that pay their dues, that play by the rules, that go to the gym, give it their all, and be overlooked by somebody else because of a name. That's not fair. It's the politics of boxing, but it's just not fair. So, to sum it up, in summary, the WBC organizes and get this big belt. They come up with this big title, a franchise title. They actually made a belt for it, too. So you get handed, when a fighter wins, like when Teofimo beat Lomachenko, they handed him the franchise champion belt. But he doesn't have the regular belt, the WBC featherweight regular belt. So technically, that would be the big brother to the little brother. But it's not. It's not the big brother to the little brother because he doesn't have both belts. Devin Haney has the regular belt, and Teofimo has the franchise champion belt. It's really mind-boggling to me, and I don't understand why this happens. But boxing sucks when it does. It's never good. So now, we go to the Devin Haney fight and the Gamboa fight. Devin Haney is the champion. But had he lost to Gamboa, Gamboa would have been a featherweight champion. So we would have still been debating who's the real undisputed champion at 135. We need answers because as the boxing public, boxing connoisseurs, the boxing, if we don't understand, how is it that Mauricio Sulaiman can go out and be so proud about advertising a franchise champion, because we don't understand. I still don't understand. And I heard him on the Akin Barak show, which is a great show, great guys, but they let him off the hook. He gave this really political answer when they asked him the question, who is the champion? He started talking about how much money Devin Haney makes and stuff. That's not the answer. The answer is, how is it that you have two champions in one weight division? All the belts do it. But how do you have two champions in one weight division and we don't know who is the real champion? That's why Undisputed is such a big thing. Everybody wants that one guy, one face, one name of a division because it makes boxing exciting. If you can go do one-stop shopping, which is what Teofimo did. He came, he beat Lomachenko, he took all the belts. And he should be the undisputed champion without dispute. But unfortunately, he's not because Devin Haney holds a version of that title. I don't know if that fight will ever be made with Devin Haney and Lomachenko or Devin Haney and Teofimo because I think Teofimo needs to move up to 140. Devin Haney needs to campaign at 135, defend his titles. But I think once Teofimo moves up to 140, he'll vacate the titles then. And here's what's really interesting. As soon as he moves up, whoever wins that belt or wins all the belts, or if they get the belts, they're going to be arguing the same thing we are. Who is the real champion at 135? Because I fought for a belt. I beat the guy. I have the title. But whoever fought for the franchise champion is still going to be the franchise champion. So it's going to be so confusing. They need to have clarity. They need to clear this thing up because if they don't, like me, and I know a lot about boxing, if I can't answer these questions, I'm sure the casual fan will not be able to answer these questions. And the WBC needs to do better with explaining who's the real champion and who's not. Because it's important for the fans who follow boxing to support the real champion and know the difference. Because if you keep adding these belts, it's really conflating things and it's confusing. And a lot of people will be turned off. And the goal is to grow the sport of boxing, not push people away because they don't understand. This is your host, Boxing Sweet Science, trying to explain things for you. I hope I made it clear. And if I didn't, I tried. Make sure you follow me on Instagram. Join the podcast. If you like what I'm talking about, on YouTube, swipe. Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Boxing Sweet Science 2.0, the podcast. And today I wanted to talk about a few things. I want to talk about Deontay Wilder and the Glovegate situation, as well as Ryan Garcia and the Luke Campbell fight, which is going to be postponed. Also, I want to touch on Javier Fortuna and what I think his future looks like. And and the Canelo situation, Canelo Caleb, and why I predict that Caleb will beat Canelo. And people are thinking, oh, you're crazy, but that's just my feeling. I know, but we'll dig into that. But first, let's start with the Deontay Wilder Glovegate thing. I've been, over the last couple of months, I've been reluctant to give my opinion on the glove situation and Deontay Wilder's accusations, because I was one of the people calling for him to speak up. I thought that he should have a say in why the fight was canceled. We initially know why it was postponed. It was COVID related, but then there was a second date that came up and we didn't really know why. There was some speculation as to why it didn't happen. They believe that Wilder had an injury that was nagging him and he had to attend to that. And that happens in boxing. But when Wilder finally broke his silence, I got to tell you, I was taken aback by it, because the theatrics, the Bible scripture, the music playing, and then I just kind of, I felt for him, but at the same time, intellectually, I just couldn't understand. I couldn't grasp it, because even listening to his complaint, there was two competing thoughts, and he, you know, almost shot himself in the foot in what he was explaining. And that's because I pay attention. So, number one, the first thing I want to say is, when Deontay Wilder start talking about the glove, the alleged cheating, oh my God, the alleged cheating in the first situation, I thought it was strange that he posted the video from the first fight. And when he showed that first video with the glove flopping back and forth, I thought, okay, you're accusing him of cheating in the first fight. The first fight, mind you, where he fought to a draw. He fought to a draw in the first fight. But in the same breath, in the same video, he said, "You tried to cheat me again, and it did not work." Okay, so he said, in the first video, you cheated me. I mean, you cheated me in the first fight. But then he said, "You tried to cheat me again and it didn't work." So essentially, to me, that means you caught something and you stopped it from cheating. And if you did that, and that's the fight that you lost, to me, you have no leg to stand on. Now, again, please don't misunderstand. Don't get me confused. I'm not saying that I think Tyson Fury is beyond cheating, because I'm not saying that. I don't know. I don't put anything past anyone, so I'm not saying that he is innocent. I'm just saying I find it curious in the timing that Deontay Wilder comes out and says that he wants a rematch because he thinks he deserves one. But in the same breath, you accuse the guy of cheating you and cheating in boxing. Now, it's one thing to accuse a guy of taking steroids, but lacing a glove is like the pinnacle of cheating in boxing. You do that, and then after you make these crazy allegations, and again, I don't know if it's true or not, but I've just taken exception to the timing and what Deontay Wilder said. He said that you tried to cheat in the second fight, but it did not work. But you scratched my ear. I watched that video. I watched that fight. And I watched that fight probably about four or five times. And I got to tell you, the second fight, I did not see anything on Tyson Fury's glove to make me question what he did or what he didn't do. Again, I'm not saying he's innocent. I'm just saying from my perspective, watching that, again, I wasn't in the ring. I don't know what Deontay Wilder felt. But I do know from looking at the second fight video that the picture that he associated with his hand as cheating apparently, to me, looks photoshopped. I think Deontay Wilder presented a photoshopped picture of the glove that is dented inside his dissertation or whatever you want to call it, his sermon, when he came out and finally spoke. If you look at the video, he offers two legs of evidence. One was from the first fight, which I think honestly was doctored, but the second one was definitely doctored, in my opinion, because when I look at the glove and I watch the fight, there is no indication of a flat glove. Again, I wasn't there. I didn't get hit by it. But just using common sense guided by intelligence, I can deduce that there was nothing in that glove. Okay. Now, he goes back and he says, I want a rematch. Give me a rematch. You deserve a rematch. I deserve a rematch. I gave you one. And, you know, when you were down and out, you owe me that. You got to give me back a rematch. All right, I get it. But after you, it's like almost equivalent to accusing a guy of date rape, saying that he took you, but then the next day you call him and say, what time are you picking me up so we can go out? To me, it just doesn't add up. And if I'm Tyson Fury, I'm feeling the same way. Now, again, I'm going to say this again. I don't know if Tyson Fury is innocent or guilty. But what I do know as a man, if you have your integrity impugned, if you have your character assassinated, any person is going to say what Tyson Fury came out and said. He came out and said, yo, he'll never fight me again. And I felt that because I understand if you are on the up and up and you did not do anything, 100%, I would feel the same way. I'm not giving you another shot. You call me the cheater. Why you want to date me again? If you say I raped you, why you want to date me again? That's my logic behind it. So then the other aspect of Wilder's theory is the Mark Breland situation. And I've had the pleasure of meeting Mark Breland. And, you know, knowing a person and knowing a person is different. Getting introduced to a person and knowing a person is different. But again, using intelligence guided by experience, I can't find a reason why this man who's been with you, who brought you to the level you were, who guided your career professionally, got you to the place where you was, would ever risk anything. Because I have to believe that he loves him. I have to believe that he loves Deontay Wilder. He's been around him forever. He's like a son to him. Why would he ever? I don't see what is in it for him. Why would he ever? What a spike or put a muscle relaxer? What Deontay Wilder insinuated is that Mark Breland, which is his trainer, one of his trainers, not the head trainer, but one of his trainer, was the only person associated with his water. And if that's the case, he said his legs felt weak moments before the fight. And he insinuated on another podcast or another show that he believes that something happened with his water. And I can only deduce that he meant Mark Breland laced his water. So I gotta, again, start common sense and using common sense. I said, well,
water has no taste. So if somebody put something in it, wouldn't you taste it? I mean, is it just me? If water has no taste and somebody put something in it, wouldn't it be like, hey, man, this shit don't taste right? I don't think he ever said anything prior to it. I don't think that was an issue. So I don't understand how he's making these allegations. Again, I just don't see what is in it for Mark Breland to have, quote unquote, spiked Deontay Wilder's water. I just don't understand. Now, Wilder's a passionate guy. He's committed. He's all in whatever he says. He speaks his heart. I know he has integrity. I know he's a good guy. I just don't understand. I have to start to question his mental fortitude at this stage. Because you got to look at boxing. And if you know boxing, you know guys. Guys are taught how to win. They're taught how to fight. Some of them are taught the sweet science. But most guys are not taught how to lose. That's not something you want to teach. You don't want to have a skill in losing. But it's the mental aspect of it that's so overlooked. It's the mental aspect that doesn't get the attention that I think it should. We take care of our physical bodies. We work out, we go to the gym, we try to eat right. But most of us, including fighters, we don't put an emphasis on the mental health. And I'm not a doctor, and I'm not trying to play one on this podcast or on Instagram or YouTube. But again, using intelligence, guided by experience, something tells me that Deontay Wilder isn't where he should be. Because as I watch all of his interviews or listen to his interviews as of late, he goes on these tangents and he starts talking about different things, race related and all. And I understand this is the time that we live in, but I still have to question his mental fortitude at this stage. Because you got to understand, this guy and all fighters, every fighter, no matter who it is, they're all egos. You have to be a fighter. But I can't understand why he's coming out like this and in a timing. If he had this proof or allegations of Tyson Fury's cheating, why not come out before you took the second fight? Because the glove gate flop was actually the first fight. The actual video that he is representing is from the first fight. So what I'm trying to understand is, why take the second fight if you are accusing a man of cheating? But now you want a third fight from the same guy that you said you have proof of cheating. It just doesn't add up. Something tells me something is off. And I know eventually we'll get to the bottom of it. I will get to the bottom of it and I'll bring it to you. But for right now, I pray that Deontay Wilder is well. I know he's going through a lot. And from the last news that I got is apparently he's supposed to be taking Tyson Fury to court. He wants to sue him. And, you know, I get it, but I don't get it. Like, understand it, but intellectually, I don't get it. The reason being is because I feel like you shot yourself in the foot. You shot your load. You missed the date. Why would a guy train forever to not fight? It's just not, it doesn't add up. Tyson Fury's been staying active. He needs to keep busy. He's not going to wait for you. You missed the date. From sources that I speak to that's close to Deontay Wilder's camp, often say that even in the negotiations with Joshua, it took a while for his team to respond back with documentation. So for me, I feel like there's a disconnect with the staffing. The people that handle his business, they are lackadaisical in their approach and trying to respond to certain things. Because there's a lot of emails that I hear was floating around and that they didn't get responded to 3 or 4 days after. So, I'm not inside Deontay Wilder's camp. I don't know the particulars. I don't know, and I'm not claiming to know. I'm just saying certain things just don't add up. Again, I would love to see Deontay Wilder get his opportunity again. And in all fairness, he does. He deserves this opportunity because I believe he gave Tyson Fury his opportunity. And in doing that, it's only right. If you're a man, you give your word. But you can't say that under the same breath and saying, you cheated, you stole something from me, you are no good, but be good enough to give me a rematch. It just, for me, I mean, personally, he would never get a rematch. He would never get a rematch. But again, that I'm not there. I don't know. It just doesn't add up. I hope he figures it out. I hope it gets all worked out. I like Deontay Wilder. I wish nothing but the best for him. I like Tyson Fury. I think he's great for boxing. I don't think he's unbeatable. I think everybody's beatable. If they bleed, they could be hurt. But it's the strategy that you have to employ to defeat the guy. Do I honestly think that, with the exception of punching power that Deontay Wilder has, I don't think that he has the boxing skills required to beat a guy like Tyson Fury. So there's a saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing expecting a different result. If I had to be honest, and I am honest, I would honestly say that it's a moot point to try to get a third fight, because I truly believe, with the exception of a puncher's chance, there's nothing he can do with Tyson Fury. I believe wholeheartedly that Tyson Fury has his number. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So the next subject I want to talk about is the Luke Campbell, Ryan Garcia. As of late, recently, Luke Campbell just tested positive for COVID. So apparently that fight is going to be postponed or pushed back. But I have my reservations about that, because I don't honestly believe that they're going to reschedule this fight. They knew it was a dangerous fight. They knew it was a fight that Ryan Garcia needed to prove that he was who he said he is. It's a step-up fight. It's a graduation fight. And I believe that, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I don't believe that they're going to reschedule this fight. I want to be proven wrong. But if I look at the history of what's been happening, with the exception of Top Rank, every time somebody tested positive that was a top-ranked fighter, they went on to fight. They rescheduled the fight, and they got the fight back. But I don't feel the same for this fight. I don't know why. I just don't feel like they're going to reschedule Ryan Garcia to fight Luke Campbell. I just don't see why. And here's why. Because if you look at the Jorge Linares situation, he was supposed to fight Javier Fortuna. He tested positive for COVID, Jorge Linares. He's fine now. He was hospitalized in Hong Kong or China, wherever he is. And that fight never was rescheduled. That fight was never even talked about again. What happened? Meanwhile, Javier Fortuna is sitting around without a date. He didn't test positive. He was fine. He's ready to go. So I'm thinking again, why not give Javier Fortuna the date if Luke Campbell is not going to be available? Because originally there was conversations of Ryan Garcia and Javier Fortuna and Jorge Linares. Again, Jorge Linares is available. He tweeted out, I'm ready to go. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to move with that date or they're going to try to push it back. I think they have a commitment with Top Rank. I mean, a commitment with Matchroom. So Golden Boy promotes Ryan Garcia and Jorge Linares. And Matchroom promotes Luke Campbell. And they are in bed with each other because they got the DAZN deal. So it's kind of, I get it. I understand it. But I just believe that they should give Ryan the test now. Okay, COVID came, I understand. But give him the test. Give him Jorge Linares. Give him Javier Fortuna. But keep the date. Keep the date. Don't push it back. Luke Campbell could come back. If he wins, if let's just say Ryan Garcia beats the guys that they're giving him. If Ryan Garcia can pull it off and beat, let's say, Jorge Linares or Javier Fortuna, then Luke Campbell can be added into that mix. That's feasible. It's possible. I think that should happen. But again, I just don't believe that they're going to give Ryan Garcia and Luke Campbell another date. But I want to be proven wrong. I really want to see this fight. And it's almost like every time we get close to seeing Ryan pass his test, something happens. He was getting ready to fight Jorge Linares. Linares tested positive. And then they gave him, oh no, it wasn't the positive. It was the COVID, it was the travel ban. He couldn't come over because of COVID. He wasn't infected at the time. He couldn't come over because of COVID. And there was a travel restriction. So that's why that fight didn't happen. Now they rescheduled it. They gave Jorge Linares Javier Fortuna, and then he tested positive for COVID. So that didn't happen. And it's just kind of frustrating. And if we're frustrated as fans, imagine how the fighter feels. You're training for a guy, you're preparing for him, you're talking crap for him, you're picking, you know, you're trying to push the fight the best way you can, and the fight gets canceled. I get it. It's a part of boxing. Nothing, like with boxing, nothing happens until it happens. And even when it happens, you got to make sure it's happening. I mean, the last moment a fight can be pulled. So I get it. I understand it. I just want to see Ryan tested. Everybody else passed their proverbial test. Javante Davis. Leo Santa Cruz was supposed to be a formidable opponent. Javante passed his test with flying colors. Teofimo Lopez. He was supposed to lose to Lomachenko. But he passed his test with flying colors. Devin Haney. He was supposed to be tested by Gamboa, who's a veteran, two-division world champion, Olympic gold medalist, but he's 39 years old. Granted, he didn't get the stoppage that he wanted, but he won, and he did it in impressive fashion, in my estimation. He outboxed him, he outclassed him, he outworked him. Now, you know, some people say that, you know, Gamboa didn't fight. He gave up. He just survived, and it's hard to look good against a guy who just survives, and I understand that. But nonetheless, Devin Haney went on to pass his test, which leaves us Ryan Garcia. It's either the boxing gods are protecting him or the boxing gods are punishing us. One way or another, something is happening where we won't see the best of Ryan Garcia. We want to see, I'm rooting for the kid. I want to see the big fights that everybody want to see. I want to see the Tank fight, the Teofimo Lopez, that division is on fire. They're actually carrying boxing while the heavyweights are in the law. I want to see them fight everyone that they can fight. But I want the fights to make sense as well. I don't want the fights just to be done just because of the sake of doing them. I want the fights to make sense. I want to see a guy test it before they get in the ring with another guy. I want to see a guy fight a guy who another guy beat so they can have a fight in common. Though that is... that leads up to the climax of the fight. That's the introduction, and then you get the climax once they finally fight. I like that. The foreplay is essential, right? You fight the guy I fought. I beat the guy, but I beat the guy better. It's good for talk and good for conversation back and forth. It brings the interest. But then when they finally fight, that is the climax. This is what I like. I like the foreplay of boxing. I want that. I need it. But it seems like Ryan Garcia keeps getting the pass. And again, it could be or it may not be. But I really want to see him go and pass that test. It's important. It's important for his career and it's important for his legacy. Additionally, unlike everybody else who I mentioned who passed their test or their proverbial test, the pressure is really on Ryan Garcia in a lot of ways because it's sink or swim. If he loses a fight to Luke Campbell, Ryan Garcia goes back to the line. And then he will be forever labeled as the Instagram fighter. He will be forever labeled as that guy who didn't pass the test. And that's unfortunate, but it comes with, it's par for the course. Because if he does win, he'll receive the accolades that you had never seen before. But he should get the same scrutiny if he loses. In closing, I really want to see those two fight. I want to see him tested. I want to see Luke Campbell bring the best out of him. Because I'm rooting for Ryan Garcia to win this fight. But I think this is going to be a fight where he's going to prove what he's made of. He's going to be tested. He's going to be bullied. He's going to have to fight. And it's important for him to prove that he is what he says he is. Which leads me to my next guy, my main man, Caleb Plant. When you talk about an authentic guy, a guy who says he's one thing and he's actually that guy, Caleb Plant is that guy. Caleb is a 168 pounder who has footwork, speed, agility. You know, he's not as outspoken or, charismatic as most fighters. He doesn't believe that he has to go out and sell a fight. But he believes in himself. He believes in his abilities. He believes in his work ethic. And I believe in it too. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Please don't misunderstand. I love Canelo. I think he's amazing. I think he's great for boxing. I think the loss to Floyd was the best thing that ever happened to him because he proved that he is going to only get better. And every time I've seen Canelo go out, he's only gotten better. Round by round, fight by fight. You know, people pick on his selection, but I think it's important to pick the right opponent to look good. And Canelo does that. Floyd did it. It's no different. It's okay to do that. But that matchup is a dream matchup for me because I know boxing. I live this shit. I breathe it. And in doing that, I study fighters and I study styles. And I know historically, Canelo has had problems with guys who have not just boxing ability, but foot movement. And that's essential in boxing. Because if you look at what Canelo has done in the past with his opponents, he figures them out at some point. But with that fight with Lara was a telling fight for me. Lara had head movement. He had foot movement. He had the physical agility. He had enough power to keep Canelo honest and ring IQ. Canelo chased him around the ring. Canelo did figure him out later, but it was his power that saved him. I had Lara winning that fight. So when I think about the guys that Canelo lost to and the guys that he had problems with the exception of Trout, where Trout didn't have the punching power, and Daniel Jacobs, we'll get to that. But I want to say that Floyd Mayweather wrote the blueprint on how to beat Canelo. And what that is foot movement, punching power, ring IQ. And Caleb Plant has all of those things. He has the formula is one thing, but the ingredients is another. And he has all the ingredients to beat a Canelo to a decision. My only reservation, and if I have to be honest, my only reservation in that fight is Caleb Plant slowing down in that fight and allowing Canelo to catch up to him. Because Canelo is a devastating body puncher. And if you want to take the sail out of a boat, you have to deflate it, right? Or you have to hit the body, beat the body, the head must drop. So my only reservation in that fight is Caleb's conditioning. And I'm not saying, because he works with the best. Larry Wade is one of the best strength and conditioning coaches. And Caleb Plant's work ethic is one of his greatest attributes. But he has a dog in him too. and he has an ego. And he will stand there and try to exchange. And you can't take the fighter out of a boxer, and you can't put a boxer in the fighter. But Caleb is a perfect combination of two. But sometimes the fighter in him makes his debut, and it shouldn't. And that would be my only reservation in that fight. I don't need Caleb to stand there or take or get winded and try to bang with Canelo, because Canelo is masterful at cutting off the ring and taking the guy's strength. So people always ask me, why do you think? And that's my reason why. Canelo is a great boxer. He has upper hand movement, but Canelo can't fight going backwards. He's never had to. Additionally, Caleb can do both. Caleb can move, he can box, he can stick, and he has enough power to keep Canelo honest. Now, will he knock Canelo out? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But if anybody's going to get knocked out, it will be Canelo stopping Caleb. But he can box him. He can box him to a unanimous decision. And he will. This is my prediction, if that fight ever happens. And there's other factors why I believe this to be true. Caleb is younger. Caleb is fresher. He hasn't been in that many wars. Canelo is a young veteran. Canelo is a young veteran. And Caleb, unlike Caleb, Canelo is breaking down. He had knee surgery. He wears a brace on both knees on different occasions. And that is his strength. Fighters break down. They get wear and tear. It's what's happening. Through strength and conditioning, through training and all that stuff. But noticing Canelo, one of his Achilles heels, is he gets winded as well. He gets tired as well. But he has the strength and upward movement, body movement, to mask when he's taking a round off. But if you have a guy with the ring IQ of a Caleb, he will capitalize on those times when Canelo is trying to take a breather. And it usually happens between the 9th, 10th, and 11th round for Canelo. He made a point when he fought Chavez Jr. to stand up in between the rounds because his stamina has been in question before. So, and if you don't believe me, go back to that fight. You'll see that he never sat down in between rounds because he wanted to prove that he can fight and that he had the stamina and his conditioning was never in question. But when a guy laughs and smiles at you and say, "You didn't hurt me," is usually a telltale sign that that punch hurt. So when a guy is standing up in the middle of the corner saying, "My win is good," it's usually a telltale sign their win is not that good. So that's my prediction on that fight. That's my, in summary, Caleb movement and Canelo's wear and tear. That's going to be the difference in that fight. Caleb will win that fight. He will beat outpoint him. Now, it depends on what the judges are looking for and who they love and who's actually going to be scoring that fight. Whether Caleb could get a decision if he survives, if he doesn't get touched, if he doesn't get tired. But in my estimation, that's who is going to dethrone Canelo. It's 2020. Anything is possible. And trust me, I wholeheartedly believe that that guy is the guy to pull it off. Listen, I'm going to try to do this podcast and upload YouTube often. But I just appreciate you guys and your support. If you like what I'm talking about, if you like my opinions, if you want to be a part of what I'm doing, hit the like button, subscribe. I really appreciate all the support. Check out my podcast, become a subscriber. It means a lot. This is my passion, and I just want to share what I love about boxing and my knowledge of boxing with the same people who have or who are like-minded. So this is my 5th episode of the podcast. I hope I did you guys proud. And again, smash the like button on YouTube. And make sure you follow the podcast on Spotify, Google Play, and it should be on iTunes. This is Boxing Sweet Science 2.0, the Fighter's Advocate, the self-proclaimed Fighter's Advocate. Make sure you smash that button. I appreciate your support, and I'm signing off.